We're going to start in Genesis 3, from verse 17. Genesis 3, verse 17. To Adam he said, "Because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree about which I commanded you, you must not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil you'll eat of it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken. For dust you are, and to dust you will return." And today we're going to look at Ecclesiastes. And really, in a sense, Ecclesiastes is about a man writing essentially about what is predicted in Genesis 3, the curse that God pronounces. Ecclesiastes 1:9, for some reason, has been one of my favourite passages. "What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. And behold, there is nothing new under the sun." The book is possibly written by Solomon, but not necessarily. And some parts of it are difficult. There's nothing new under the sun. Well, there's new things that we see all the time. And so it might seem. But we really have to think in the context of what the writer is talking about, and to put it in perspective of the whole canon. And perhaps sometimes some things are difficult because we only make them difficult by not taking a simple view, or looking at things from the wrong angle or perspective. And I guess perhaps what the writer's talking about there is there's nothing new in human nature, or there's nothing new in terms of the curse that God pronounced in Genesis 3. And as we go through Ecclesiastes, it's important to remember that doctrine is not built on the things that are hard to discern, but the things that are plain. And there's lots that is about Ecclesiastes that is very plain. And the whole conclusion of the book that we'll get to is very plain and very straightforward. And it's great that the book closes with that very straightforward conclusion for us, that this is the whole sum of things. So you don't need a preacher to summarise Ecclesiastes for you. It's done there in the text. So let's look at what we can learn and reinforce rather than being worried about what we don't understand. God's wisdom is found only through diligent search, facilitated by divine revelation. And that's perhaps one of the other themes that comes out of Ecclesiastes. And so the text must be read in the context of the whole Bible, as I was saying, within the framework of the whole canonical framework, as it might be put. Otherwise, as with any other book of the Bible or any other passage of the Bible, if you don't put it within the framework of the whole Bible and the whole gospel message, it's very easy to arrive at conclusions, other conclusions, wrong conclusions, or to simply co-opt the text for particular purposes or particular biases. And so that's something, some guidance that I would suggest as reading through Ecclesiastes to keep in mind. Not focus on the small things that might, on the face of it, seem difficult, but be looking for the big picture, and most importantly to look at it when trying to understand something, try to understand it in the scheme of the whole Bible and the whole gospel message. Let's have another look at another passage. I'm going to go through a number of different passages that jump out at me. There's not any particular pattern or theme, but just a few passages through Ecclesiastes, and we'll pass some comment as we go along. At the start of chapter 3, there's a very famous passage there that was immortalised in that song that I'm sure many of us know. I think it went back to the 60s or something like that. "Time for every purpose under heaven." But just after that, starting at verse 9, a passage that I love. "What do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race." And again, this is harking back to the Genesis 3. "He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. And how true is that? Just reminding us of the great wonder of majesty and greatness of God. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it, and nothing can be taken from it. God does it so that people will fear him. There's so much in all of that. There'd be a whole sermon on that. But I love that bit at the end. God does it so that people will fear him. What does God want? What's God's purpose in this? This is talking about so that people will fear God. Chapter 4, verse 6 is a verse that reflects similar to Proverbs 30:7-9 that I'll just read first. No, sorry, I've got the wrong reference there. I've made a typo, but I'm sure you know the passage of better a dry crust with peace and quiet than feasting with strife. And here we have in Ecclesiastes a similar theme: better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. Similar theme. Chapter 5, 1-7 is another theme that comes out elsewhere in the Bible, as you will well know. No, guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know that they do wrong. And by the way, the word fools, as you see from your NIV study note, implies not someone who cannot learn, but rather someone who refuses to learn. So someone can be an intelligent fool. So that's an important thing. When the Bible's talking about a fool, it's implying someone who refuses to learn. But back to the passage. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few. A dream comes when there are many cares, and many words mark the speech of a fool. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to fulfill it. He has no pleasure in fools. Fulfill your vow. It is better not to make a vow than to make one and not fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin, and do not protest to the temple messenger, "My vow was a mistake." Why should God be angry at what you say and destroy the work of your hands? Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, fear God. So is this theme that comes out again. Fear God. Chapter 7, verse 1. A good name is better than fine perfume, and the day of death better than the day of birth. What do we learn from that? Well, one of the suggestions is that we learn more from hard times than we do from parties. So if learning and gaining wisdom is a good and valuable thing, then that fits in with that. 7 verse 20. Indeed, there is no one on earth who is righteous, no one who does what is right and never sins. And how key and central is that to the whole gospel message, and why the sacrifice of Jesus was critical to the salvation of man and man being able to be reconciled with God, because there is no one who is righteous, no one on the world, in the earth. And 8:17, again, then I saw all that God has done. No one can comprehend what goes on under the sun. People toil to search it out, but no one can discover its meaning. Even if the wise claim they know, they cannot really comprehend it. And so, yes, there is no one who can understand absolutely everything that happens on God's earth. Only God knows that. Some more proverbs and advice, such as chapter 10, verse 4. Just a simple comment. If a ruler's anger rises against you, do not leave your post. Calmness can lay great offences to rest. Calmness can lay great offences to rest. I love that. And then to, as we're getting towards the end, chapter 12, 1 and 2. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them, before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after the rain, and so on it goes to paint this picture of old age, including the comment when people are afraid of heights. And we know that, I was reading a book recently that commented about sense of balance, and it's interesting that, yes, we know that one of the things that happens to us as we go into old age is that we lose our sense of balance and become afraid of heights, and this was well recognised 2,500 years ago. But that's a little bit of an aside. The point is, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Ecclesiastes confirms that God defines the meaning of life, whether anybody likes it or not. And obviously in the world there's a lot of people who have great difficulty with that, that the meaning of life is only to be found in God. He created life. There are many obviously who have a lot of difficulty with that, but whether they like it or not, that's the reality. Ecclesiastes is a book of a man expressing frustration. And this frustration seems to stem from the reality of sin's consequence. Remember back to Genesis 3. Not from perceived flaws in the Lord's character or in the value of wisdom. Ecclesiastes is a book a little bit like Job. And there's some similarities and differences. The difference is that unlike Job, the teacher's pain is self-induced. He's wringing his hands over frustrations that he's bringing upon himself. But also, like Job, the teacher never departs from monotheism. And that's something to be reminded of. Obviously, if it did, it wouldn't have become part of scriptures. But to us, that might seem obvious. It's just there. It's just invisible almost. But when we stop and think about it, how important that is in the whole scheme of the gospel message, that there is one God. And Ecclesiastes affirms that, that even through all the frustration and hand-wringing of this writer, he never departs from that basic fact or questions it. Back in Genesis 3, we see that that all came from seeking to acquire wisdom reserved for God. Let's just start back there again. When the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye, and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. She noted that it was also desirable for gaining wisdom. And so it might be observed that the writer of Ecclesiastes has desires that are perhaps parallel with what led Eve to sin. And hence here's a little bit of a conundrum. To seek wisdom is good, but to seek that which is the preserve of God is not. And so I believe that this is a bit of a theme that comes out here and through the Bible, that there are some things that God chooses not to reveal and that are purely the preserve of God, and it is not the place of man to pursue them. And in some ways that is perhaps what drives the frustration of the writer of Ecclesiastes is to trying to understand that which God has not given to man to understand. It's a quote from a commentary that what continues to plague him is the realization that he does not know the inner workings of God's mind or the specifics of timing set by divine decree. In other words, he still wrestles with his own finitude. He is a man, not God, and this fact leads to frustration in one so thoughtful. End of quote. So, back to the conclusion. Some of the commentaries suggest that the conclusion from 12:9 is written by somebody else, but it may or it may not have been. In chapter 7, verse 27, he also writes in the third person saying, "Look," says the teacher, so on and so forth. So it may have been a pupil of the man, or it may be the man himself just merely speaking in third person, or like an actor on the stage who at the end of the curtain call speaks for himself. There's also a passage in there for students that students will often quote, "Of making many books there is no end, and much study wearies the body." And isn't that the truth? So how do we summarise Ecclesiastes? Well, here it is for us. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of every human being. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. And that's a theme that came out in a number of those passages, that this is the conclusion, this is the purpose. Fear God. And that's something that I believe that we should focus our hearts and our minds on, that we should learn what it means to fear God. And that really is the whole summary of the book of Ecclesiastes, those two words, fear God. And again, God defines the meaning of life. And Ecclesiastes paints the futility of meaning apart from that which is within the context of fearing God. Let's pray. Dear Lord God, we thank you that even though we can never fully understand...